Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the Midlife Midsters podcast, your podcast for inspiration on being bold and saying yes to making the most of midlife.
All right, so ladies, we're going to have a conversation today following up on the really excellent guest that we had in an earlier episode, Michelle Woodward, who talked to us about the purpose and the sense of purpose of being a postmenopausal woman. And as we all know, that's kind of a little bit of a cultural thing because there are some people out there trying to define what a postmenopausal woman is or should be. And I think we all have some thoughts about that. So how many of you are sitting here waiting right now to have grandkids so that your life will have purpose?
I'm not waiting for it, and my kids certainly aren't waiting for it.
My life already has purpose.
Mine too. I've never looked at it that way. And I actually think, and I've spoken to this before about the word menopause. It's not that it's a bad word. It basically means you just don't have a period anymore. And I think it's just odd. It's odd that a stage is identified for women as women that no longer have periods.
And it's kind of weird.
It is strange. I mean, there's got to be something better out there. There's got
to
be.
Well, it's tied to this perception of a woman's primary purpose throughout her life.
Absolutely.
As being associated with her childbearing.
Fertility.
And so when you're postmenopausal and your primary purpose is done, what can you be other than a caregiver for other people's children? And, you know, I just don't. What if you never have grandkids? What if you never had kids?
And what about the people who couldn't have kids that didn't even get to that?
Or you're eliminated.
And here's the other thing that makes no sense in our current context. If you think about, like, I think about my grandparents. On my mother's side, there were 18. I have 18 first cousins. Okay. So there was a lot of grandparenting to be done. There were a lot of people to help. I'm like, my kids are my mother's only grandchildren. And my kids have had at some point six grandparents. Like, how many? I mean, there's not enough kids to go around. I'm like, they would be completely overwhelmed. I'm like, that just doesn't even make any sociological sense at the place where we are as a country. Now, you can argue that we may not be as a good place as a country, but that's great. But those are the facts. So, I mean, I just don't even, it doesn't even make any sense to me.
I also think it's kind of curious because, like, you can walk and chew gum. Like, if you have grandkids, you can spend time with your grandkids. But they
Mercy, we were mothers, and you taught walk and chew gum and, like, cook dinner and run the world. I'm like, what are you talking about? We could do, like, 25 things at once.
Right. And I don't see there's any exclusive reason why the grandmother falls in that role because, you know, a man who's retired, which presumably the partner of the postmenopausal woman is, it could be a post-prostate man, would be equally able to provide childcare. So it's kind of crazy that that's become somehow some thought that's floating out there.
My mind, Marianne.
What?
I never thought about that, that we talk about postmenopause and really all it is the cessation of a period. And why would we define an entire point
of our
lives?
Stage of our life.
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
But do you walk around? I mean, I know you're a little younger than, well, you're a little younger also. Is that, like, I don't walk around thinking about myself as being postmenopausal. I mean, there are times that I do because I might be going to the doctor or there might be, as we talked about before, changes in how our body. But for the most part, I just go about my day being me.
But there's a lot of conversation out there that differs for that right now, which is interesting.
I think about it a lot right now because I literally just technically became that.
Right.
Literally, in the last month. So
exactly.
I'm sort of like, I think about it a lot, but I think that soon I won't.
Right.
That's
and
actually
the
a great
timing
point.
About that. And there's also a timing, like, yes, there's conversation, you know, in wherever you want to say where there's chatter, but we can all talk about what you just referenced, right? grandfathers who are taking care of their kids. There's also changes in family structures where there are grandparents who, for a variety of reasons, are in fact the primary caregivers for their grandchildren, not because they were all saying, I can't wait to have grandchildren, but because of financial or other reasons, that's become, I think I saw somewhere, grand families maybe is the terminology. So much has changed in our society over the last, as we talked about, 50 years in terms of changing roles for women, but there's also just changes in terms of family structure. And again, I think that, stop at change in family structure.
I think a good question to ask ourselves, and I've asked myself this, do the menopausal years, have they changed me? And I think physically there is change. Emotionally, there is change. Just like in puberty, there's chaos, there's hormones, there's temperament, there's all kinds of things. But have my menopausal years changed who I am? No. I think inwardly, I'm the same person. I have my drive. I, you know, try to be positive. I have the same mindset. But there's a lot of opportunity now. And I don't think society looked at postmenopausal women or women later in life as having that purpose.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I would say that the cessation of periods actually changed my life in an incredible big way.
Physically, yeah.
Yeah, and not because of not being able to have kids anymore, but because I'm someone who suffered for many, many years with difficult periods. I had endometriosis, I had painful periods, I had heavy periods. It was like 1 week every month that I was just not capable. I'm not going to say that. I was capable, but I had struggled to get capable. And I can remember times like when I was in my childbearing years as a lawyer in court, having to actually like go lie down when we had a break because I would be in so much pain and had to wait for the Tylenol to kick in. Not having that has freed me up to be a more courageous person, yep, to be a more tuned in person, to be a more productive person. Mm-hmm. So, you know, postmenopause isn't taking anything away. It's actually added.
I agree. Yeah. Like physically and emotionally, yeah, there are changes.
Fewer migraines. During menopause. Like all these things. I mean, there's some unpleasant changes, but hormone replacement therapy is fantastic.
It is the bomb.
It is fantastic.
I would agree.
Oh, and so with that, I'm sort of like, you know, this is much better than, and I also was one of those that I really struggled for many years and took birth control for years and years and years, in part to even that out. And the migraines, oh my gosh, right before the period, I was like, I don't miss that at all. I don't miss worrying about getting pregnant. That's also delightful. Right. Delightful. Don't miss that at all.
You know, it's a wonderful stage. It really is. And I used to find or think about it more daunting because the stories that you would hear, especially like with physicians, and you've spoken about this, Lizzie, and when there are issues, it's like, oh, it's because you're menopausal. And yes, you might go through the hot flashes and be emotional, but the doctor's response, especially white males, I'm so sorry, is that, okay, there's another whiny lady here. You know, she's not feeling great about where she is in life. Let's give her an antidepressant and she'll be okay. And that has to change. That mindset has to change. Mm-hmm. And I think it is slowly. It's wonderful to see women in that space now, physicians and therapists really addressing it and getting to the root of the problem, because we've all gone through it now. And there is an emotional piece. And I compared it a little earlier to puberty. But once that emotional piece is gone and you're postmenopausal, wow. The world opens up.
It's like reverse puberty. I remember going through it and I was like, this feels like puberty in reverse. I remember these feelings where I'd be angry and I don't know why. And not trying to be mean to anybody, but I'm sort of kind of mean. Hormone replacement therapy, ladies. They don't have that for 13-year-olds.
Well, so. And they also, I don't believe, had that for women 50, 60 years ago either.
Right.
That is true. Yeah. And it's not for everybody. I'll say that just as a clinician. It's not for everybody. It's a personal choice, but it does make that transition easier.
So I didn't do the hormone replacement, but I did do the anti-anxiety. So, but I don't think that really had anything to do with menopause. That was just a me thing.
No, I think it actually does. My doctor talked to me about that, said that some women, my OBGYN talked to me about that. Some women, it's the decline in progesterone creates a lot of anxiety. And so sometimes they use hormone replacement therapy. Sometimes they use SSRIs and other anxiety medication to help people through that transition.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Marla, you said something before that sort of triggered a thought in me. There was an article that I read, I can't remember which magazine it was in, but it was talking about the change in society and the decline of the nuclear family. And one of the points, there was actually 2 points in the article that I thought were interesting. One was the nuclear family that we, you know, hold so dear and put on such a pedestal is sort of an isolated moment in world history. It only really began after World War II, and it really lasted until about really 20 years ago. And then the nuclear family structure began to change and morph, you know, single parent families, sometimes grandparents raising kids. So it started to change. So, you know, we're holding something up as the standard that really wasn't the standard. What existed before that was extended family structure. And so maybe that's a little bit where this notion of, you know, your role as a postmenopausal woman is to be a grandmother and to help parent the kids maybe comes from. And I do think there is something about extended family structure. I think what is different in this moment or needs to be different in this moment is the understanding of what the roles of the extended family members are. So you're not limited to that role. Just like we as women, we're not limited to being mothers. Well, we're all mothers. Our mothers probably were. Your mother wasn't. Your mother wasn't. My mother was limited to being a mother. Yeah. Your mother wasn't either. So I just think there's something about like being involved in your family's life, but that doesn't mean you have to be only involved in your family's life or that you have to take over some aspect of it to be involved. There's like room to, I'm going to say it again, walk and chew gum. Right?
But there's also, I mean, I think there's, you know, when you're talking about extended families, but I think it's very much of a U.S. focused notion, right? Because in a lot of other cultures, right, the grandparents are like living nearby or living in the same house.
The Asian communities.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, when you think about it too, in our country, you're hiring people. If both parents are working out of the house, somebody has to take care of the children. So you're hiring somebody to take care of the children who becomes a family member, if you will, but maybe in some cases where for financial reasons and opportunity, people choose to have the grandparent be that caregiver while the parents go to work.
So story time.
Okay. All right. Of course.
Why that isn't actually the ideal, you know, that we seem to have some people in our culture think it is, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, Marianne, I know you've heard this story. When my kids were small, my mother did not live nearby. So we kind of had to do it on our own. We had a nanny and we had lots of great friends that helped, but we were basically on our own. My mother came to visit when my kids were very small. My daughter was maybe, I think she was under a year old. Harry was about 3. And she said, "You need time to yourself. I've got this. I'll take care of the kids. Go take the day. Go do something. Go spend some time on your own." And I was kind of a little reluctant to do that. But, you know, my mother raised 3 kids. And she actually has other grandchildren that loved her, that she, you know, helped take care of. So, okay. I went out. I was gone for an hour and a half. When I came home, I saw my mother sitting on the front porch. There was a empty bowl full of cigarette butts sitting next to her. She was chain smoking. And as I got out of the car, walked up the porch, she said to me, "Don't ever leave me with these bleeping children again."
Okay.
Well, it turned out that while I was gone, my daughter had been asleep in her crib. She woke up and she wanted to be fed. My mother had just turned the oven on because she was going to start making dinner, which, by the way, I hadn't asked her to do. There was a broiler pan in from the night before that we hadn't cleaned. So she turned the broiler on but didn't realize the pan was in there. Goes upstairs to try to start giving my daughter a bottle. My daughter doesn't want a bottle because she nursed. So, you know, I had bottles of breast milk in the fridge, but that was not what she wanted. While my mother's upstairs trying to force my daughter to take a bottle, she hears my 3-year-old son say, bye-bye, Grandma. See you later. And the front door opens. She runs downstairs and sees the oven on fire.
Right.
So she has now a screaming,
oh my God, your poor mother,
hungry baby, a stove on fire, and a missing three-year-old. So she ran out of the building. Actually, she was very smart. She ran out of the house and she tried to think which way would he go. And we lived on a hill, so she went downhill, which was smart. And she managed to get my son, who did not want to come home. My daughter was still in her arms screaming. The stove was still on fire when she got home. She threw whatever it is that you throw it, was baking soda, on the stove fire, and put the baby back in the crib crying, put Harry downstairs, locked in the den, and then sat on the front porch. But when she went to sit on the front porch and slammed the door, it locked.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So when I came home, she was locked out of the house, chain smoking cigarettes, very upset. And there was screaming going on with the baby.
Thank
so,
God she had her cigarette.
Note to self, hire a professional.
Hire a professional. Exactly.
Yeah, not all postmenopausal women are apt to be able to take care of their grandkids.
I won't be.
All the time.
Not all the time.
Correct.
No, I won't be.
Or maybe when they're a little older.
Yeah. Right. So I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, we need to start defining, and that's what we can do in this podcast,
yeah,
all the other things that you can do in this stage of your life. And that's kind of our goal, right? You're not limited to that role. But having said that, if that's the role you choose,
mm-hmm,
there isn't anything wrong with that. And I think that's the other piece. Like, women have to be, both men and women have to be more forgiving to women of all ages and what they choose to do.
Well, and it's also, you know, none of your business, right? You know,
yeah, like, that's true.
Right. Like, being respectful of, right, we each choose to do and live how we choose to. And I think you were saying, you know, as long as we're not hurting anybody else,
yeah,
right? That's how we all have to live in this shared world that we live in, right? We're all trying to make the world a better place in any way that we're choosing to do that, whether it's a podcast or being a nurse or what our jobs are, or helping businesses or raising families. But my choice is my choice. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a little bit about, you know, the public discourse,
mm-hmm,
as well, right? I mean, no, because we don't want to talk politics. But
unfortunately, I think also, and talking about menopause or postmenopausal women, and maybe it's lifting, but for some reason, I feel like the way it's presented and spoken about is shaming. Like, there's no real purpose. Like, it's a shaming period of time for some women.
Or that we need to have a defined purpose, unlike other people.
We're just living. We're
doing our thing.
Michelle was talking about when we interviewed her about the male gaze,
mm-hmm,
and that, like, I mean, let's face it, there is a patriarchy, right? I mean,
It down here.
You wrote patriarchy.
Yep. There you go. It's not just Barbie movie.
It's really not. And there's, you know, women have been defined for centuries, if not all of history, until the current moment, really.
Right.
And by the current moment, I mean like the last 50 years, in terms of their relationship to men. And for women to be defined not by that, but by what they choose, how they choose to define themselves, that's actually a new phenomenon that I don't think society is entirely comfortable with. A lot of women aren't even comfortable with it. And hopefully there's a little bit of a swing back in some ways, but the pendulum will keep moving so that we'll keep making some progress.
I hope so. I mean, I love this stage. It's unfortunate that in the culture today, they look at older women in a different way, but we're changing it. And better than that, we're showing our kids, and they will definitely take it to another level, I think.
Yeah, what you said actually makes me super uncomfortable. And
why?
Not what you said, but it is strange to me that our value has been defined only relative to men until the last 50 years. Like, that makes me really sad, because I struggle with this a lot, because sometimes I'm like, wow, a lot of the world really does think of me as a second-class citizen. And most of the time I go through life and I don't really care. But sometimes I'm like, that really sucks, because I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can get stuck in thinking that.
Yeah.
And then I sometimes, like, suffrage. That was white men that voted for women to be able to vote. Right. So there is hope.
Yeah.
You know, there is hope there. But sometimes I get stuck in that and I have to remind myself, it may be small incremental steps, but there's hope there.
Mm-hmm. I'm reading a biography of Barbara Walters written by Susan Page. And one of the things that I've really been struck by is how hard she had to work. And I don't mean that I'm surprised that women in that time period who were breaking barriers and were the ones starting doing that had to work hard, but that she was calculating and driven and had to continually be pushed back so clearly by men whose jobs, if you will, right, she was kind of encroaching on. That's how they looked at it. And when somebody was forced to have her be on a show, would say, well, you can't ask, you know, I'm going to ask the first three questions in the interview, even though you are on site interviewing the person who we're featuring. Really focused on keeping women down, keeping her down to get to what you were saying, that it's only been 50 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a lot younger than she is, and I saw that. I mean, I saw some of that when in my working life.
Right. Oh, working in the healthcare field and being a nurse, talk about gender inequality.
Absolutely.
And being spoken down to, and you don't know. And sometimes maybe I did.
Yeah, sometimes actually, I was right.
I would challenge any male doctor anywhere in the United States to keep up with you and your knowledge.
As a diagnostician, because I'm not really sure there's anybody better.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting. I think we are setting a new standard for, like, the next generation. And it's not just because of the way we manage our lives, juggling all the things that we've juggled and the choices we've made, but because of the way we're living right now. And we're showing not just what women can do, but really how anyone can live a midlife.
Anybody, yeah.
Because the things we're talking about, they apply to men as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if men can change their mindset and their outlook about what their lives can be, then it will be a lot easier to accept, oh, women have a different function too than maybe men had thought about before.
Right.
Yeah. This is a place where I do see, I have hope in the generation that's in their 20s, because I do see women thinking about themselves differently, and I do see men feeling like they have more options. And that they can do different things and that they don't have to sort of follow what our husbands or fathers did. And I think that's pretty cool. I hope that continues.
Well, you know, Robert, you know my husband, and I will say that so many people come to me and say, oh my gosh, Robert talks about everything you're doing. He's so inspired, and he is my cheerleader for sure. But I think as men see us doing things at this stage in life, he doesn't find it intimidating. Some might, but hopefully it's a lesson to them as well. I don't mean lesson, but maybe it'll open up their lens a little bit of opportunities that they can do during this stage of life too. Things that they didn't get to do when they were younger. Because I think a lot of the stuff at least for me, I mean, are things that I thought about at a young age and that I want to do. Actually, Robert sent me a link to this woman I want to meet, who has opened up a summer camp for women. And I used to love, did y'all love summer camp?
I did like summer camp.
Yeah. So just doing different things, inspiring things, but hopefully men will take our lead as well. Cause I think women are forging the path in really reinventing themselves. Maybe reinventing is not the word, but we're looking inwardly and we're living some of our best days and best life.
Mm-hmm. And I do think men have sort of traditionally looked in terms of what they leave behind, you know, that word legacy.
Good point.
What their legacy is. And you know, that's fine. And again, like just like a woman could be many things. She can be a stay-at-home mom. There's nothing wrong with that. She can be a career professional. There's nothing wrong with that. She can marry or not marry. There's nothing wrong with that. A man can choose to focus his life on what he leaves behind, some masterwork or some business or something. But it's also absolutely fine for him to not do that, for a man to live sort of what we used to think of as a woman's role, to be a caregiver, to be, you know, more interested in being with the children than what the job is. That's okay too.
Right.
And we can help support that in the way we interact with the men in our lives.
Or figuring out how to have, I mean, my son talks about this, how to have a career that allows him to be a very engaged parent. And I think, you know, again, that's a, we talked about it previously, right? A shift in our culture, a shift in this next generation that they want. I think, Carmen, you had said, right, that they actually have in some ways a gift that we didn't have, right? Where we all, like we said, for the most part, right, you had to have two wage earners to have the kind of lifestyle that you grew up with. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean individuals, but just in terms of the society. And now our children's generation are saying, well, maybe we don't want that.
Right.
Right. We're looking to define quality of life differently than we all did.
And it's not always just career stuff. I mean, like I remember, so two examples, one my dad, one my husband. I remember growing up, my dad was a golfer and I wanted to learn how to play golf. I was probably about 11 or 12 years old. And I asked him to teach me to play golf and he said, girls don't play golf. That would have been like mid 1970s. Girls probably really didn't play golf then.
They had an PGA then.
Yeah. But like he didn't think beyond that.
Yeah.
Girls don't play golf. Fast forward, my husband, you know, when my kids were small, he coached my son's baseball team for like 6 years. And when Harry aged up in Little League to where they don't allow parent coaches anymore, he then turned around and coached my daughter's softball team for 4 or 5 years. And so, like, there's an equality there, like, respecting both of their, you know, sports endeavors equally.
Yeah.
My husband did the same thing, but I'm laughing because one of the things at our house was that my daughter especially, she and her father were super tight. They're still super tight, but they were super tight when she was little. And it always cracked me up because every day they had appointment viewing. Matt would come home from work. They had appointment viewing to watch Pardon the Interruption on ESPN with Michael Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser single day. And she would talk about Mr. Tony and Mr. Wilbon and the whole thing. And I will never forget, I got a call at work one day. We had a very long time nanny. And she never called me at work. She handled the kids and whatever. But they'd had my daughter was about 3 years old. And she just had a tough three-year-old day. And so the nanny called me and told me whatever Isabel was doing. I don't remember anymore. It was so many years ago. And I remember catching myself as I'm saying, you know, I'm really disappointed to hear that happened today. And I'm really sorry that you are not going to be able to watch ESPN with your father. No Sports Center tonight and no Pardon the Interruption. Two people on the other side of the cubicle who were falling on the floor and laughing. They're like, she's talking to her three-year-old about how she can't watch ESPN Sports Center. And then I started laughing and I was like, oh my gosh. But it's true. Like having an engaged father, like who knows what they'll end up watching.
Yep. You know, the other thing that I'm seeing, talking about purpose and this stage in life, and all of us do a lot of community work, and I definitely find a lot of purpose in that. And I think now I have free time to do that. So I'm diving in and doing as much as I can. Everyone's familiar with Doorways here. But at the recent events and their board composition and all of that, the males that are showing up to volunteer and to do community service, I've never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful to see that. I think they're following in their wife's footsteps somewhat and things that they've seen. I'm not sure, but that's a wonderful thing as well. So I think that we can learn from each other and we don't have to like put the stigma, you know, on females at certain stages of life. And
I really dislike the word females. It's really weird. And it has nothing to do with the whole gender discussion. That
is it the word male and Effie in front of it?
Right. Well, it's not even that. It's to me, it's such a clinical term.
It is.
And it just doesn't express.
Science. So it's women, not females.
It's women. Yeah. And I just kind of feel like it's just so divorced from individual people. I don't know. It's something about the term that I don't like.
Yeah, clinicians, you'll hear about it because that is the genetic at birth, male or female.
And you hear it actually in law all the time because like there was a male suspect, there was a female witness, or there was a, you know, whatever.
A male
female
person, suspect.
People born female is right.
The, right. And I just prefer men and women. I just think they're, you know, better terms. But anyway, that I digress.
Babies, it's male and female.
Yeah. Any last thoughts on the purpose-driven postmenopausal life?
I was thinking a lot about, you know, purpose in life, postmenopausal or menopausal or premenopausal or teenage. And I just feel like it got me thinking about what is my purpose in life. And it's not defined so much as a stage of life for me. I feel like it's really just more about my connection with the world that I live in at a particular moment or throughout my entire lifetime, and less so that I have a different purpose now than I had before. And I really do believe that maybe I've come to a deeper understanding of my purpose in life, spending time focused on sort of who I am and how I relate to people and how I want to contribute in the world. And I know I've shared this with you all like through text messages, but maybe not on the podcast. But for me, one of the greatest joys of doing this podcast is the connections that we're making with individuals, and not necessarily a broad, huge listening world, right? Even as it's growing, which is wonderful, but if what we're sharing resonates with one person or five people, and somehow a story that any one of us has shared speaks to somebody in a way that they needed to hear, for me, that's an incredible purpose and gift in my life.
That's really nice, Marla.
That's nice. I think that's a good place to end.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to wrap up. So to our listeners out there, I hope you all think about what your purpose is and think broadly. Because it can be anything you want it to be. And tune in for future podcasts.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.